Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Goldmines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to an all-new episode of Comedy Goldmines, where we do what? Come on, say it with me. That's right. I hear you. I hear you in your cars. I hear you in your homes. And you all said it at the same time. You said, where we get inside the amazing minds of the funny. Man, and that funny, the funny mind is so complex. So complex. It's so deep. It's interesting, which is why I love doing this show, because I get to talk to people in a way that I normally would not. And my guest today, I've known for a long time, but we've never had a real, like, conversation. We've never really got down and got deep and asked the questions and given the answers that we felt that we both, like, wanted to know. There's other shit I want to know. I'm not going to waste any more time. Ladies and gentlemen, guess what? I got Whitney Cummings on the goddamn show today. Oh, my God. What an amazing mind. I can't wait to get into it. Hey, Whitney. How are you?
How are you?
I am good. Thank you.
I love you. I'm a fan of this podcast. I'm just going to say that. I've learned a lot from this podcast.
You've learned a lot. Which
I have. I've gotten a lot of healing. If you're a comedian, I think a lot of times you think, am I the only person that thinks that crazy way? And I listen to this podcast and I'm like, okay. Whew. Like,
I will tell you, I think the best thing about this is hearing people open up, but really being able to relate and identify with what's being said, right? It's like, I have not been blown away one time. I think the one that really had me like, wow, was Letterman. Talking to Letterman and hearing, you know, David go into like how dark his past was, and you know, those days of doing the show. I think that's the one where I was like, damn, you know, during that time, I'm quite sure he was probably ignorant to a lot of his actions because he was in it. You're in the fog, but then coming out of it, being able to look back and kind of move the fog away and talk about it, I'm quite sure it's healing and refreshing, but you know, it's informative.
And I also think that comedians, you know, and also thank you, you create a space where comedians aren't on the defense. Like, we don't feel like we have to make jokes or like we're corny mm-hmm. if we talk about our work ethic, or we're nerds if we talk about how much work we put into it. Like, you really create a space where comedians can get granular with another comedian without feeling embarrassed. Because a lot of times when you run comedians, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, I just came up with that on the spot. Like, no, you didn't.
Well, you always got to be on.
Yes.
You know, that's the good and the bad is that when talking to a comic, the comic has to be on. There's an expectation, right? Where's the funny? And it's not that isn't a good thing. It's good when you can be on. It's good when you can have that ability to deliver a laugh and do it at the drop of a dime. That's always good. But it's also good to show that you're a person. And that's what I think this does. I want to talk to you because I have so many good memories of you. For those who do not know, I actually did a movie with Whitney. Whitney and I worked together.
Before I knew you well, and remember the one day I was there with you guys, I had a gig in Vegas that night and I had to leave early. I'm like, it was a nightmare. So I was so nervous that whole day. But you of all people know what it's like to have a gig scheduled for 8 months and then
absolutely
an opportunity to work with Kevin Hart and Josh Gad and one of my old friends, Jeremy Gerlich, comes up. I'm like, I can't really make this work, but I have to make it work. And then I had to leave early. So I wish we got to hang out more and I got to.
Well, she's talking about the film The Wedding Ringer. But what I realized about you that day and being around you, like, you're real. Like, what you're funny is who you are. Like, you know how, like, sometimes there's a two-way character Like, you got the funny and then you got the person, right? And it's
the
like
act and then the person.
Yeah. You're a natural goddamn ball of laughter. Like, our time on that set, it was all bits.
It was
all
just
doing bits. It was all bits. And it takes a good, like, the comic that understands the bit that's not a bit, but it's a bit, that's my favorite comic. Like, that's the comic that you can just be around all day because you entered a bit. And then you find yourself engulfed in the bit.
Oh, where there was no, we never like had there was never any moment of like, here we're doing bits. It was just like, when you vibe with someone right away, when a comedian's the real deal and you guys get to just go straight to silly goose shit is the best feeling in the world. Cause I always say like the guy that I'm dating now, any new guy I date, I say, I have to open with this on the first date. I will always be closer to a comedian I've never met than I'll ever be to you.
Wow.
And I know that sounds messed up, but
it doesn't.
We have a weird connection that as soon as I see a comedian that I know of in the airport, we're just gonna be talking in a way that you're not even gonna understand. It's gonna look like we're in love, but we're not. It's gonna look like flirting, but it's just two people that finally share the same reality and have the same set of maladaptive tools and they get to play in the sandbox together. I felt like it's the first time we got to like, you know, mess around like puppies that got to play for the first time. You know, it's the best feeling in the world.
It was an amazing feeling, but more importantly, it was something that gave me a strong grasp as to who you were, right? How many years? How many years in comedy now?
I think I would about 17 years.
17 years in comedy. Holy yes, shit. It goes by fast, doesn't it? It
goes by fast. And, you know, I feel in a weird way lucky that I came up in LA mm-hmm. at the time that I did because there were rooms. It wasn't clubs yet, it was rooms. In mm-hmm. LA, we were doing bowling alleys, we were doing sushi restaurants, we were doing parking lots, which that skill came in handy later when the pandemic came and we were back to playing parking lots and cars and stuff. But I do feel grateful coming up in LA, even though people think of New York as the best place to come up. And I don't disagree with that, has the best clubs in the world. I kind of argue that's the best place to stay good. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning in LA, you have to fight so hard for stage time. I mean, to 3 minutes, we would go to, Pasadena Ice House, then drive to Hermosa Comedy and Magic, 3 minutes there. Then we would drive to do 3 minutes at a bowling alley. We were doing comedy in restaurants where people were eating. Remember mm-hmm. that Miyagi's room on Sunset?
Mm-hmm. You know, I love that you're saying what you're saying because I didn't get to see that era in LA. I knew about it, but I was a part of the New York hustle. So I was a part of the world of rooms and comedy clubs there. Coming to LA, it was more about me getting into the comedy scene, but it wasn't as hard because I was coming in with
already established.
Yeah, like I was, there was a name attached to me. So it was a call. Okay. And then it was, okay, yeah, we would love it. So I didn't have to fight the same way that you're talking about, but I've only heard about three comics that I know talk about the scene in the manner in which you are, about like that world of rooms that really once upon a time existed, that really developed some of the comedians that flourished after that time of getting deals, getting opportunities. Like that's an era that I've talked about on the show, of course, before, that has died down a little bit. But the comics like yourself, you're one of them that has come from that grit, that grind, but that was able to find success after, and you said success, not just to become relevant, but go on to have successful comedy careers, headlining, ongoing, ongoing, ongoing.
Not only that, but if you were in LA and a young comic, you weren't gonna get into the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, the Improv. You had to start your own show. So it mm-hmm. also helped you build this business side of your brain where you're like, if I mm-hmm. want this opportunity, I have to create it. So by the time I was pitching television shows or trying to make something for myself, it didn't occur to me that I didn't have to do it myself. I wasn't like, why aren't these agents doing this for me? I was like, oh, if I want a show, I have to make it. If I want to do a movie, I have to write it and produce it. You know, so in LA, if you wanted to make it as a comic, you had to write your own, or you had to book your own show. You had to book the comics. You had to put the flyers on MySpace. Like, you had to be a business person. And so am I allowed to ask you a question? How did you get this
yes.
brilliant business brain? Because most comics don't have that.
Being a sponge, man. I got lucky.
When I think Kevin Hart, I don't think luck. I think.
Well, what I mean in luck, like what you just said, you simplified a world that so many people complicate, right? Like I grasped the simplicity of what I could do. And you just said, yo, like as a comic, I was depending on like, yo, what agents? Get me this, get me that. And then it dawned on you one day, you was like, oh, wait, I can write it, I can create it. Well, you can. And, you know, you can do that as much as you want. I had figured out that it's easy to do it and get told no and keep going until you get told yes. And when you finally hear yes, what was it about what you did that was different from what you did that got you to no's? And wow. It was about me just really building on those relationships. Like, you know, meeting writers, meeting showrunners, meeting producers, sometimes we kind of just let those moments fall between the cracks. But those are big opportunities. Those are big moments to kind of, I want to talk. Do you got a second? Can I talk to you? Do you mind if we sat down? Can we get coffee? Hey, do you mind? Like, I know you wrote blah, blah, blah. Can you just tell me, what was your process? How did you do it? Like, so many people are dying to give information because so far few in between people ask. And it's free.
It's interesting because to me, I always feel like my advice is boring and no one wants to hear it because I always just go work harder than anyone. And if you're working mm-hmm. harder than anyone, you're already going to be ahead of them in some way, shape or form. Like that, just work harder than everyone. And for me, I feel very lucky that this is where my luck came in. I never was into drinking, smoking weed, or any of that stuff. I grew up around a lot mm-hmm. of alcoholism. I grew up in a very mercurial alcoholic home, which I think
but
is...
How big is the family?
Family is, there's a lot of siblings I've never met, but let's just not bring them up because then I'm going to get a bunch of Venmo requests that I can't handle.
Okay.
So
I can relate. I can relate.
I bet you can.
We share some synergy. Yes, we share some synergy. Okay, I understand. A lot of stepbrothers, stepsisters, some you've met, some you haven't. I got it.
I can't buy any more strangers new sets of teeth.
I got it.
You got to pay the dentist directly. I'm not sending you no cash anymore.
Where does this originate? Where are you from?
Washington, D.C., sir. Washington, D.C. in Virginia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. and Virginia, you're in the middle, on the cusp.
Not even on the, here's what's wild about this, and I'm very grateful for this now, even though that's the great thing about being a comedian. Everything that ever hurt you as you get older, you're like, thank God that happened, because now I can use mm-hmm. it, or it helped form all your traumas, you can sublimate into money. And mm-hmm. I grew up, born in D.C., but I spent half of my time in a rural place called Roanoke, Virginia, in West Virginia.
I know where Roanoke is.
You know Roanoke? I'll leave more everywhere. Of course you do.
Yes, Roanoke is a great place. It's a great market.
Yes, a great market.
Skip it.
Smart.
Yes, people skip it. Roanoke is a great market.
Mm-hmm. Super, super smart. And super smart people, really honest. I feel very grateful because I spent half my time in this hardcore South and a rural area and half my time in a very cosmopolitan city. So I'm able to mm-hmm. empathize with both sides and I'm able to see why both sides believe what they believe. And then I can kind of be in the middle, you know, able to see both perspectives. My dad always said okay. sign of intelligence is to be able to defend a point of view that you don't agree
Ooh.
With. And I think that was a big part of laying the groundwork for being a comedian, you know, because sometimes we have to take the hot take in the thing that everyone disagrees with and then find a way to defend it for comedy.
Now you said my dad always said, closer to your dad than your mom or your mom than your dad?
Not super close to either.
Okay.
You know, I was talking about this, you know, the other day of the sort of our parents, the kind of tools that they had. And I'm in a big forgiveness of we forgive others, not because they deserve forgiveness, but because we deserve peace. And our parents did the best they could with the tools they had. So my dad and I, we had a very awkward relationship, you know, men of that generation. His dad was in a war, didn't give him a lot of love. I didn't get a lot of like ostensible love. And, but now I look back and I realize he was, I played sports. Like, we could only connect through sports, you know? And a lot of the advice I got from him was through sports. And I now look back and I'm like, I couldn't have had a better preparation for what I now do for a living, even though at the time I was like, we don't spend enough time together. We don't have tea parties. And I'm like, oh, the universe was giving me the father that I needed for the vocation that I was my dream. So,
you know, it's interesting that you say that, right? Two things that I'm realizing, because I have to listen. I think when you listen, it just gives you the better opportunity to not just respond, but, you know, have a more meaningful engagement when you're really listening. As I'm listening to you, you're very well read. Your vocabulary is amazing. And I can tell you, there's some reading in there, because you're giving me like things, like one thing that was said to me, or I firmly believe, like, and you have these like anecdotes that you're using that are really strong. I like it. As you're talking about it, you just said something that made me think just about me as a father. You said, you know, now that you're older, you look back at that, and it's like, well, did you spend enough time, or did you not, right? But you said he was hands-on with this thing. As now, you know, you now being a comedian, you now looking back, do you feel like if the parenting was different, that you would be the person that you are now? Like, if there was, like, added bonuses of time or QT or whatever, and if you wouldn't be the person that you are now, isn't it in a weird way like that the parenting was kind of on point for what it was supposed to be?
I think we are so trained as a society to hate our parents and to blame our parents for everything that happened. I'm like, bitch, you're 50. Are you still talking about your mom? Like, it is wild to me that, you know, there is, in our culture, it was funny because I was having a conversation with someone about this, like, you know, this is an incendiary thing to talk about. I feel very comfortable criticizing the Chinese government, not Chinese people, Chinese government. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree the Chinese government has a couple flaws. But I was talking to somebody about, you know, they have a dog meat festival over there and they eat dogs. And like, it's such an interesting, like, you know, it's a very different philosophical thing to not value that. And over here, they're man's best friend. And I was talking to someone who is of Asia, of Chinese descent, and she was like, well, in China, they look at the way that we treat our old people, and they're horrified. Mm. We put our old people in storage units when we can't deal with them anymore. We just throw them in a home and let them rot. Mm. And you're like, whoa, that's what comedy's all about, going, whoa, I never looked at it like that before. Now, how do I make it funny?
You got a completely different POV from just a different eye and a different lens. Somebody gave you a different look through a different lens, and it changed your a perception in a snap of a finger.
In a snap of a finger.
Absolutely.
And that's absolutely what the best observations, the most interesting observations I think comedy does, is like, whoa, you just opened a door to this reality that I hadn't even considered before. And that really stuck with me, because I was like, oh God, we just in general, I've just have been thinking about this a lot, how much we disrespect our elders in this country. We go, you're stupid, you're not, you're backward, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You still call assistant secretaries. It's like, okay, well, you just changed the word like a year ago. Like, what the fuck? Like, and you didn't tell me. How the fuck am I supposed to know? You put it on Snapchat. Your messages disappear. How the fuck are we gonna know about any of this shit if you don't tell us about it, you know? We don't talk about ageism enough.
Yeah.
We don't talk about ageism. You know, obviously it's not the most important ism right now with what's going on in the street, but we don't, we get so mad at old people, you know, when they're like, well, I think he's a transvestite. It's non-binary now. It's like, where would I have fucking read that? Like, you know, so we're very impatient with older people. And I guess I've just been trying to tell on myself and call myself out about all the times that I spent blaming my parents for the bad decisions I made. I can't be in a relationship because of my daddy issues. It's just easy. It's just like an easy thing. And so I look back and know, you know, I am so grateful. I had a single mother that I thought was neglecting me. I thought it was too busy for me. And now people ask me about my work ethic and they're just like, why do you work so hard? I'm like, I don't even think I work hard. I work, you know, 10 in the morning, 8 at night, then I'll go do stand up at night. And then I feel like I'm slipping sometimes. And I'm like, oh, I grew up watching a mom work. She worked at Bloomingdale's. She worked at a department store all day, every day. She came home, made us dinner, cleaned the house, and then worked until I fell asleep. So I thought she was neglecting me and a bad mom at the time. I felt ignored. And then I realized she was just programming me to work harder than anybody. And it's really not about what your parents tell you. It's about what they do.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
Did you come to that realization, or was that was there a significant amount of help to get you there? Is this therapy? Is this trauma? Like what got you to the point where you could look at life, look at your past, the way that you're looking at it now, and say, you know what, I want to take some responsibility for my actions. And instead of pointing at the bad, let me try to find the good. What got you to the space where you could find the good?
I'm going to try to make this like succinct because it's a lot. It will probably surprise no one that it took a lot of different healers to get me here. But I think to me, well, the first thing is I went into a 12-step program. It's called Al-Anon, ACA Al-Anon. Okay. And it's a basically adult child of an alcoholic. If you're in love with an alcoholic, and by alcoholic, we define that as in order for alcoholism to be present, alcohol doesn't have to be present. Any kind of compulsive behavior. If you grew up in a home where there was, compulsive drug use or just compulsive like rage or some kind of dysfunction, essentially, you know, as the youngest, I developed this overdeveloped sense of responsibility. I learned mm-hmm. to walk on eggshells around narcissists and people's feelings. I kind of just had all these maladaptive behaviors, and I found myself in relationships consistently dating men that needed to be rescued or fixed. I defined myself through my productivity. I mean, I was dating like drug addicts that couldn't read. I was like learning Spanish to fight with drug addicts downtown.
Were you attracted to the bad guy? Like what is it? Is
that because I was trained to feel good about myself if I was cleaning up a mess?
Okay.
And that's kind of what I was doing in my relationship. And I realized like all the common denominator and all the things not going well in my life mm-hmm. is me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's me. And whatever I'm doing, it's not working, you know? And to me, I like finally took my ego out of it. And I, you know, had family members going to rehab. I was using all the force in the world, all my will to try to make myself successful, to try to get everything I want. And it's like something, I'm the problem. There's something wrong here. I went into a 12-step program, Al-Anon. It's free. It's free medicine. It's free therapy. It's a bunch of people going.
How'd you find out about it?
I found out about it after putting a family member in rehab. And I was going every day, bringing the person food, trying to fix them, trying to get them sober. And they were like, actually, you need to go fix yourself. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm perfect. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just fixing everyone. I'm like an angel. And they're like, no, you're being controlling. You're a perfectionist. And you're basically judging other people and not giving them the dignity of their own experience. You're meddling in other people's life under the guise of helping them.
That's strong. I mean, I think it's like a... I understand. Let me start off by saying
call it codependence. You're codependent with this person. And when we get involved in other people's problems, we don't give them the ability to solve problems on their own.
I can say I agree and I understand. But, you know, when you're dealing with people that are looking for help or that need help and that don't want to get help, and you take the initiative for someone you love to get the help, well, there is a sense of control that does come into that because they're not doing it and you love them so much that you don't want to see them destroy their lives. And you do take a sense of control and know you're going to do it. No, you're going to go and this is what you have to do. And, you know, maybe that line does get blurred after doing it so much to where there is, I'm tired of doing this for everybody. I'm sick, y'all. And I'm the one that's got it. And I got it. Like maybe that does come into play and I can see where someone on the outside would say, maybe it's time for you to kind of do something for yourself. But I would simply say, just I would dumb it down. You know, a high level of negative energy is going to embed pieces of negative in you, whether you like it or not. You can be as positive if you want, but if I'm around people that got an attitude every fucking day, well, one of those days I'm gonna get an attitude.
That tension is
contagious. So separating yourself isn't a bad thing, and it sounds to me that that's what you're talking about. Like, you made a decision to say, what do I need to fix with me? And you separated yourself from that cloud of negativity. That's what I'm hearing.
I realized that I was putting all my energy into other people and not myself.
That's a no.
I was taught that was selfish.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Growing up, there's a tricky thing when you grow up and you learn, like, you know, yes, say yes, ma'am, yes, sir, help other people. But there's a point where it was chronic to the point of where I wasn't putting energy into my own endeavors and into my own dreams because I was aligning with people that were always a mess and full of chaos. And I'm helping people move out of their boyfriends. But I would just align myself with people that were a mess. And that's when I learned the people you're friends with and the people you date are a business decision.
I like that, Whitney.
And if the people in your life are depleting you and can't take care of themselves and you're martyring yourself all over them as a way to not focus on yourself, and I was wasting a lot of time the same way I saw a lot of my peers wasting a lot of time doing drugs and getting drunk and doing that, I was wasting time in just toxic, chaotic relationships. And it helped me develop this system that works for me today. It's going to sound dorky, but I align my schedule with how many energy dollars I have. I say, okay, every day, let's say I have 100 energy dollars to spend, right? So I'm also a dork. I set my clothes out on Sunday for the week so that I don't get stuck in decision fatigue. I get stuck in decision fatigue. Like, if I have to—
It's called a billionaire mindset.
It's just so that I can wake up. I already know what I'm wearing. I also wear the same thing kind of all the time.
Billionaire mindset.
Like you get like three of the same shirt, mm-hmm. three of the same pants, and so that I'm not at the buzzer wasting all my energy dollars on decisions that no one fucking gives a shit about that aren't mm-hmm. gonna matter and I'm gonna get bogged down. So I have to go, okay, I have 100 energy dollars a day. I'm gonna do the podcast with Kevin. That's gonna take, you know, 20 energy dollars. And then I'm gonna talk to this person. That's gonna take 20. And then I'm gonna go to the comedy store. I have to go to the comedy store tonight at 9:30. I'm gonna need like 30 energy dollars for that. So if a friend of mine FaceTimes me at 5 o'clock to talk about their breakup, I can't answer. Because I've already spent my energy dollars for the day. And if I answer and let this person deplete me for an hour, then I have to borrow from tomorrow. And then I have less money. You know, so I think of my energy as currency and as money instead of this sort of endless, bottomless pit of energy. We move through the day sometimes as if we have infinite amount of energy. And then by 2 o'clock, you've allowed a bunch of vampires to steal your energy. And then you realize, oh, I'm not in control of my own life. I'm allowing the chaotic people around me to suck my energy, and I have to learn to play defense.
People get called selfish when they make the decision to put themselves first, right? That's when the selfish dialogue begins. And, you know, there was a point in my life where I went through a nice little selfish rant from a bunch of people, but it was because I got tired of dealing with everybody else's world. And, you know, really was there a question about mine and what I was going through or what I needed or how I was doing? You find yourself always putting out but never receiving. So I made a decision to say, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be done with that from this side. I'm not entertaining or dealing with that. And what you find when you start caring about yourself, loving yourself more, prioritizing yourself, well, you get the best out of you. And ultimately, you can't want the world, you can't want the highest levels of success without giving yourself an opportunity to be the best. And this is just, like I told you, I break everything down to the base layer. I dumb it all down. That's what I do.
You really do in a way that is so like clear and undeniable. It's like a shot.
I dumb it down. It's like, it's for me, it's like, you know, wow, man, I want to do so much. I want to be good at my craft. I want to be a successful businessman. I want to do these things. But if I'm going to do it, how can I go into it half of myself? How can I go into it with a low percentage of brain? How can I go into it with the, I guess you could say, inability to not be able to receive because I got so much? How can I be burned down before I'm in the position to grow more. So I love what you're saying, and I love that you're talking about you. I love that you're talking about your energy, because for what you do, newsflash to all comics, we're providing a service that acts as a healing factor or a happy factor or a bonus for people in their day or in their week or in their month. Our sense of talent, or our tier of talent, we provide that thing called a smile, that one thing that everybody in the world loves to do. We're providing it. So if you're not doing it while you're providing it, or outside the world in which you provide it, ultimately, at some point, you're gonna look at yourself and you're gonna go, am I really fucking happy?
And people need it now more than ever. And Kevin, I have this question for you, because I'm still dealing with it. You know, I just shot a special, and there's no politics. There's no, mm-hmm. no secret TED talk. I'm not lecturing anyone how to mm-hmm. vote. I'm not trying to make anyone feel guilty for their choices. There's this new mm-hmm. thing where a lot of comedians, mm-hmm. I don't know if they're running for office, or I don't know what is happening, but when did comedians stop making jokes in front of an audience? Am I a hack? Because my new special, I called it Jokes. The special's called Jokes. I don't come out as gay at the end. I don't read my diary. I don't have an oriental carpet. I'm not standing on an oriental carpet. Not okay.
I'll put it this. I got a great
old-fashioned.
No, I got a good like I got a good breakdown for you. So you remember there was a time in comedy. I'll use myself as an example. As a matter of fact, I had JB Smooth was on the podcast, and in the beginning of my career, I was telling JB, like, I remember doing what you did. Like, JB came out to music, and when he came out to the music, he had a bit about the music that he came out to before he got into his set. And then all comics were using music to do a bit. It was like this phase that we went through as comics, right? And music became a part of the set. And then everybody got to a TV taping, and they all had their song that they wanted to play. And then on TV, they said, hey, we can't afford these songs.
You can't come out to Thriller on Conan.
Yeah, sorry. This is Michael Jackson. This is Beat It. This is our whole budget.
That's probably pretty cheap now, though.
Listen, we can't do this. So the world was flipped upside down. It was flipped upside down because for year or all this time, we all became comfortable by doing something that we could never use, right? So now, in today's time, it's always, what is going to get me? What's going to get me seen? What's going to go? Like, how do I get people to come see me, to come to my shows, or to do X, Y, and Z? And you're seeing a lot of comics go down the shock factor. They're going down a shock factor road, right? Like, what? You're in a day and age where clickbait is real. And clickbait is now attached to comedy in a high way, right? Like, if I get a piece of material that's clicked on because I said something, well, maybe they'll watch the whole thing. Maybe they'll watch my whole set, and people will, maybe.
So, I don't trust
you
that.
Know, well, you shouldn't.
You know, when we've been doing this long enough, there's a, that doesn't pass the smell test to me, because this is not an ephemeral thing, right? If something is not hard earned, I don't, I'm suspicious of it. Like a quick adulation, especially something over the internet. I didn't hear you laugh. I didn't hear you laugh on the other side of the screen. And there's different kinds of laughter. We have to play on defense now against, there's clapter now. Comedians will go up mm-hmm. and go, so, you know, Florida, everyone in Florida is fucking crazy, right? And people go, woo, that wasn't a joke. There was no punchline. If you, like, you should hate yourself for whatever that joke.
Yeah, but you know what, you're a.
That's a rally.
You're a vet. You're a vet, though. When you can't, like, as a vet, as a person that's been doing this for so long, that's earned their stripes, even though comedy has taken its bumps, bruises, and we've had our share of ups and downs, just in, hey, what's considered to be like comfortable, not comfortable? Like, what's too much, what's not? We've all been on the seesaw of going back and forth. But you're real vets and you're real people that understand their true approach to the craft. Well, they don't deter from being themselves, because you ultimately know who you are. And comedy isn't about proving who you are. It's about telling your story through a funny format. And in my story, in my POV, here's how I look at life. You're never going to deter from that as a vet in comedy. You're still going to do it. You just now know how to do it with the adjustments of making sure that you're being present, making sure that you're being respectful. But you don't go out, like you said, you're not running for mayor or president, or there's not a campaign underneath the thing that you're doing. You haven't lost sight of your reason.
If I do an hour of comedy and walk off stage and you think I'm a good person,
yeah, it's bad.
We have a problem.
Yeah, it's bad.
Like, I'm not here to make you think I'm a morally upstanding person. Yeah. I'm here to make you laugh. Yeah. In this thing where comedians want to have it both ways now, I want to be funny and a saint. It's yeah. like, no, you got to pick one. Because this whole thing where it's like, well, comedians need to be morality, like, you know, experts on morality. It's like, no, we're experts on what whiskey goes best with NyQuil at 2 a.m. in Cincinnati. We're not experts on this shit.
Yeah.
Why did you say, okay, I just watched Norm Macdonald's
his special that got released. I love the way they released it. I love the fact that he did it. You know, I think greatness will forever be celebrated, but when gems are left behind that can make you smile after that angel flies, I mean, that to me was dope as hell. You know, the headphones on, like just the grimy, the gritty way about it, and just him having a good time.
Dude, when he goes, I feel like he knew he was going to die. With some of those jokes, he knew he was going to die.
For my listeners, she's talking about Norm Macdonald's special that was released on Netflix, and it was released after Norm Macdonald passed away, RIP to the legend. But he did it like on his like little computer, like in his home.
Do you remember what he said? He goes, you know, I don't know what this new thing is where everyone's looking to comedians to weigh in on political events. When Vietnam was happening, were people sitting around going, I wonder what Red Skeleton thinks? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah,
we're ridiculous. We're clowns. And I want to fight for the right to stay a clown. Yeah. And when people say to me, they're like, well, why aren't you using your platform for good? I'm like, okay, well, this people paid money to come see comedy. They didn't come here for me to guilt them about, you know, that's a separate thing. And I think comedians, you know, we have a lot of influence now, you know, a lot because, you know, politicians obviously aren't trustworthy. Now nobody trusts the news. So everyone's like looking to comedians now for like, you guys are the adults in the room. And you're like, okay, well, give us a second to just adjust to this.
Yeah, this is different. This temperature, this water is a little different. All right. I'm used to jumping in a different type of pool. I had a conversation, Whitney, and it was around like the conversation of, you know, it was one of those, Kev, you got to say something. You got to do something. And it was like, you know, people ultimately, they can put pressure on you without realizing what it is that you do. Like you, it's easy to lose sight of reality, right? And the reality is, I've worked my whole life to become a good comedian. You can't tell me after I become a good comedian that now it's time for me to speak on issues that compromise the thing that I busted my ass for. So that line that sometimes get blurred, well, you can't go back.
Nope.
So if you want me to go over here and things don't work out when I go this way, well, I can't go back, because when I go back, I pissed some people off by getting away from the thing that I worked my whole life for. And those people may go, fuck you, man.
But it's like hosting The Price is Right as a comedian.
Oh, my God.
You can't go back.
You can't go back. You can't go back. You can't go back. You can't go. You do The Price is Right, you're not going back.
You got that tiny microphone.
Yeah, once
forever.
They put the tiny mic in your hand.
You don't go back to the big boy microphone.
You don't go back to dick jokes after The Price is Right. You can't. It's just not going to seem right.
It's also, you know, I think it's up to us in a way, because I think the last couple of years I've been like, whoa, do people want something different from comedians now? And then I'm like, no. It's just there is a generation of young people who are trying to set a precedent that they themselves are not going to be able to even be held to. They haven't lived long enough to know, oh, these ridiculously high standards we're putting on people are going to fuck us in 10 years. I mean, everything that this cancel culture group is mad about, they're going to be the ignorant ones in 10 years, you know? So it's on us to just ignore them and keep doing what we're doing and not stop at every little scuffle.
Your rooms don't change though, Whitney. Like, if you notice, the comedy clubs are still comedy clubs, right? The venues are still venues. Those people come to laugh. So you just don't allow the conversation on the internet to ever merge into what the reality of our rooms are. Like, those rooms are still the rooms. And there was a moment where, of course, there was confusion. And I'll say rightfully so, right? There should have been a checking on just temperature, respect, and making sure, like, that we're conscious and present as to who we all are. Let's all take a second.
The audience will hold us accountable, though.
Yeah.
I go, we already have people holding us accountable every room we go to. I mean, I saw a comedian recently doing a joke at the Comedy Store, a big bit about fat chicks. Mm-hmm. Fat chicks. And it wasn't doing well, and he stopped doing it. You know, there is a democracy within these rooms, you know.
Oh, that's not good, guys.
I don't need someone from another state that wasn't there to weigh in. I got my feedback.
I kind of got it.
I will course correct accordingly, you know.
They told me.
They told me. I got it. I know how to do this job. I don't need your help. Like, you're in Orlando. What the fuck do you know about what happened last night at the Comedy Store? Like, I got the memo. And, like, you know, but I will say, this is maybe a silver lining take, but I do think this massive sort of overcorrection, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but 3-4 years ago, it was really hard to shock people. Like, nothing was shocking. Nothing was off limits. Nothing was taboo. We had a president with a pee tape. We had Stormy. We had hookers. Or, sorry, what do we call them now?
Well,
equals.
I mean, you could go.
Future
CEOs. They're probably. They're. I would say they're activists.
Okay,
there you go. That's a good word to call them now. That's a good word to call them now. It's a lot. Everything is changing.
Intelligent equals. That Stormy Daniels in the news. It's like, I remember 3-4 years ago, it was hard to shock people. People had gone a little numb, and this. I think what the cancer. That too, because cancel culture is fucking, I feel like, giving me cancer, but it's put some eggshells on the ground again. You know, they don't understand. They're just making us stronger. They're making us, things feel more incendiary, more tense, more fun. There's danger to comedy again. And I think that maybe we needed that.
Yeah. What do you mean? It's not even a maybe. By the way, no easy road is worth the stop. Right, without some hardship, without some cobblestone to go down, you know, your story gets a little boring. So I think it's a good adjustment, you know, that needed to be made, that had to be made. And like I said, the vets aren't complaining. The vets may have had something to say about, well, you know, I mean, look, it is getting a little crazy and out of hand, but, you know, we still are going to go and do our jobs, and we still love what we do. Ultimately, it's not going to deter you, once again, from our craft. You just said something like, in making us better, like, maybe we needed it. Like, at this moment now, hearing you talk, like, there's such a good energy to you and just to this conversation. And you've done so much in your career, right? Like, you've went down, like I told you, the road of deals, of TV, successful TV. Now, what is it in it for you? What's the driving factor for you? Like, as I hear you talking about self and self-development and, you know, holding myself accountable. Well, right now, what's the big wins for you in your career? What do you want?
Thank you. I think right now, the most important thing to me is touring as a stand-up and moving those tickets, because that to me is, that's real. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, you can't say, well, the network promoted it a lot. Oh, well, that critic is like, there's, you know, stand up, I believe, is a meritocracy in its purest form. And I think that right now it's so easy to minimize some accomplishments or be like, oh, well, that got in the algorithm, or did I get that accolade for the wrong reasons? Did they give me that because I'm a girl? Did they give me that because they, what, you know, like, there's, you know, the movie business, the TV business, it's you, so much that you deserve, you don't get. And sometimes you don't deserve something and you do get it. It just, sometimes it's hard to stay clear. And, you know, after the pandemic, I sort of had this new clarity on how much I was taking stand-up for granted, you know, in terms of if I would book a movie, I'd push the tour. Like, it wouldn't be, no questions asked. Oh, just got a movie, we cancel those 5-6 theater shows, even though we sold out at a day. You know, it was like, I was putting all that first, and I still do. It's still, you know, I know the fans will always understand, but after being taken away from it for a year and a half, and then I know you were doing those outdoor shows because we would, you know, see you touring as well. I just seeing the maybe this is silly, but during the pandemic when we were going out and doing those shows in parking lots to people in cars and seeing how grateful people were and how important it was to them. I think because we're comedians, we don't get to enjoy comedy the way other people do. You know, we enjoy it in a different way, but it's not an escape for us. For me, comedy, watching other stand-ups, I can admire them, I can love them, I can run in and watch Sebastian, you know, but I'm never truly just a fan. I'm like, God damn it, that was a good premise. Why didn't I think of that? Like, there's always going to be a little of that. And so seeing how healing it was to people during that time, and how good it felt to be back on stage, I realized I had kind of taken it for granted a little bit. Because with comedy, you're like, oh, I have all the time in the world. You're only going to get better as you get older. That's another super cool thing about comedy. I'll put TV first because women can only be on TV and movies till they're what, 32 now, or I don't know. Do we raise the age by a couple years? I don't know, but I don't know. I might play Nicole Kidman's mom in the morning show next week. I don't know. I just got an audition to play Jen Aniston's grandmother in an Apple show. But if you're, I have this theory. If you're a brunette, is if you you can't age. You can't. As a what, brunette? It, Nicole Kidman is 97 years old. And she's still playing the hot chick in every show. So
still the hot
I don't know
chick.
What else, I don't know what to do.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're not fucking laughing at Whitney doing this podcast, ask yourself why.
No,
it's just such a great approach to humor.
Trying to not make jokes. I'm sorry. You do a poignant cerebral podcast. I'm going to stay professional here, but I really want to do it the right way. I mean, I don't know, you know, exactly your situation. You're always so busy. I've had to derail a couple tours. Touring is a very, in art, you know, you have to plan certain markets and then you go back to that market and you build on it. Mm-hmm. And I've always been sort of like, I'm doing a TV show for 8 months, so scrap the tour and we'll just, you know, I'm just trying to commit to building those fan bases in each city. And my new sort of favorite challenge in touring, instead of just like dropping in the city at 6 o'clock, you know, doing my hour, you know, knowing that I'm delivering, also going, you know what, I'm going to Cincinnati. I'm going to write 10 minutes on Cincinnati. I want to make them feel special. I want them to know that I'm doing this for them.
You're finding new energy, by the way. You're finding new energy and purpose in your craft. And I like that you're talking about putting your fans first. I've always been a maniac. Like, I've movie and I'm weekend, I'm out. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, we just filmed in, I just did a movie, we're in Ireland, Belfast, and we filmed in Italy and then went back to Belfast. I was on stage in Belfast and Dublin every weekend. I found like a little dive bar that I just made my own. I would get like, I can't not, if I'm going to work on it, I'm going to work on it. And then when it's time for a tour, those Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, or the Friday, Saturday, they're dedicated to that. And Whitney, what I'll tell you about what you're saying, the decision that you're making, there's no better relationship in entertainment than a relationship between a comedian and a comedian support system, because they never forget you. It's the best relationship ever. Like, they don't forget you. And whether it's the smallest comedy club or the most intimate theater or an arena, regardless of what it is, that rapport has built over years. It lasts. It lasts.
And you're making me realize something that I was, it was sort of an embryonic thought in my brain, which is that.
Such a vocabulary. Stop it. Fuck. Jesus. That's like her 10th one. The first two stumped me. I definitely didn't know it the first two, man. I just kept it going. But it's fucking amazing.
Is it still legal to talk about embryos in this country anymore?
Oh, God.
But I do believe we are back to word of mouth. So, you know, we can post all day long. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be in Tampa. I'm going to be in Pensacola. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be here. Until you hear, I saw Kevin Hart last weekend. It was the funniest shit I have seen. Whereas the more billboards you see, the more you're like, why are you pushing me so hard to see this? Mm-hmm. But when someone you respect is like, oh, I saw Top Gun, it's hilarious. That's going to carry more weight now than 500 billboards. That might, the pendulum might swing back. I think it used to be, oh, look at all these ads and commercial. I should go watch that. But now there's so much out there that we're back to word of mouth. So yeah, when you go to a city and you make them feel special, you give them the best night of their life, and then they become your publicist for the next 2 years. You come back again, and then you do an arena. I mean, this is not the situation.
It's the best thing.
The situation. You're past that. But that is the best feeling in the world, that someone would say to their five friends, Whitney's in town, let's all go see her. I saw her 2 years ago, and I know she's going to hit this out of the park. Like, that's the feeling that I want to build.
I love it. I love where your mind is. I love that, you know, that I asked you, like, hey, what do you want? And the first thing you went to is, like, you know, you're talking about, honestly, the relationship. You're talking about the relationship. And after 17 years in the business, and you're still talking about, like, that love for the road, that love for the work, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And we get a punctuation after it, right? Like, special, no special. You got the choice. You make the choice as to how you want to put yourself or your material out there. I was going to say, is there a time span on comedy for you? Is there a end button? Is there like, I think I'm going to do this for another set time, or is this forever? Like, are we going to have a Betty White situation, you know, where you're still there, you know, Joan Rivers? Like, you know, I really do take my hat off to those icons of old. I mean, that's insane. That's insane.
Joan Rivers.
Yes.
Joan Rivers.
Yes.
This bitch. This is, I collect Joan Rivers stuff from QVC. She has, this is a makeup for your legs. It's, instead of wearing pantyhose, it's leg makeup. She was making leg makeup. I mean, this is probably blackface, frankly. I don't want to see what color that is. I'm not going to put it on.
Jesus Christ, Whitney, what are you doing?
Wait,
I didn't know. I've never used it.
Blackface face?
Kevin, I never used it. I never knew it would, Kevin, I swear to God, I would never.
Justin Trudeau borrowed it once.
she's an example, though. But I'm saying, like, that to me, like, you know, if you go before the Cosby world of insane information came out and we were all flipped upside down, there was an old man that was performing on stage, sitting on a stool.
That's correct.
Motherfuckers were coming out, like, he's doing theaters. Like, that our craft does not have to die. It doesn't. It all depends on the individual. So what's yours? What's your time limit?
Because I just did the special I just shot, which, by the way, inspired you. You take some credit for this inspiration, that I financed my own special and licensed it to Netflix.
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
I own it. Because now we don't know how people are going to consume it. We put all this effort into a special, and instead
fuck
of me.
Yeah.
instead of me pouting and going, well, people are going to watch it on their phones, I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to own it. So if you need to cut it up into 1 minute bits and watch it on TikTok over a year instead of one sitting for 60 minutes, that's totally fine. I'm going to be conscious of that when I'm performing. And I'm at the point in my life where I just want to ride the horse in the direction it's going. And instead of every time a new platform comes out, be like, well, that's not how comedy is supposed to be consumed. I'm like, you know what? Let's just lean in and embrace it. And that's what you do, I think, more than anyone. Instead of going, we're not going to break up our comedy on, you're just like, how do we break it up and make it consumable to the next generation? So if I don't own it, I can't do all that, you know? So I paid for this last special. I got some really good advice from Gary Shandling before he passed away. And we were backstage, I think it was at like the Friars Club in LA when that existed. And I was, right before I went on, I was scrambling. And you know, when I first started comedy, everyone thought I was a bitch. That was kind of my reputation because I was always writing in my notebook, like jokes before shows. And later people were like, oh, we just thought you were a bitch. I was like, no, I just was like, I was always writing up until the last second I walked on stage, you know? So I was a little bit like aloof. And cause I also always saw David Tell doing that. I remember seeing David Tell, who I thought was just the greatest, scribbling in those little nasty ass
paper. It was just the most disgusting. You open it, you definitely like it's an STD in there.
Oh yeah, that it was like that monkeypox book. That's where it originated. He'd have it in a plastic bag.
Yes. Shout out to David Tell.
The best, man. But I remember one time before a set, he's scribbling in his notebook, and someone went, Dave, what are you doing? You know, because comics, there's that party culture, and then if you're really trying, people think you're the dork, and so. He's like scribbling, and someone went, Dave, what are you doing? He went, it's called writing jokes. Ever heard of it? And I remember going, it's cool to write up until the last minute. And then Burr does it backstage. Even now, he's pacing up and down the Comedy Store hallway thinking of new stuff, you know? So I was like, keep doing this. I'm scribbling right before I go on stage. And I think Gary Shandling just sensed my desperation to just make it and make people laugh and get a lot out of this. And he went, just so you know, in comedy, you can never make it too late.
Wow.
And as someone that was an overachiever very young, it's not that, but I remember just going, oh my God, that's right. We're like wine. We're only
That's so good.
Smarter, wiser, better. Whereas Hollywood tells us as you get older, at least me, you're going to become less valuable. And it goes, no, but comedy, so much of about it is being interesting.
That's so good.
I think we forget in order for art to imitate life, you have to have a life. And so now a big part of my comedy is, quote unquote, is going out and having a life, making sure I like go out to dinner with my guy. We go to a museum. Because you're just getting stories. I mean, it's kind of sociopathic to be like, I only do these recreational things so I can get jokes out of it. Fine. But he made me understand, like, you're only going to get better. There's no rush.
That's so strong. And it's one of those things you don't follow. You don't follow because you just put such a great period on a conversation. And when you say, like, you got to live your life. Living your life is good. Like, living your life is a priority. And, you know, as a person who's definitely an example of putting the things first and before, that as a late bloomer is now trying my best to do a better job of living my life, of being more present in my life and with the people that I love around me in my life. I like that you have a path, right? And I like that it's some shit in there, Whitney, and embrace it, you know, like, and embrace it to the fullest. And like you said, it only makes you a better you to understand who the other you was. When you can look back at another version of you and go, yeah, but I love the changes that I've made. I feel so much better as this version of me. Like, that's a good thing. And in comedy, I like that you can track it. Right. And
comedy, we make mistakes in public.
Yes.
We grew up in public, you know? Yes. And so to me, there's nothing better than have chosen this path, which seems ostensibly a little bit masochistic, going to be able to go, oh, I now get to sublimate all the mistakes I made and the pain, and I get to use it for something good. I remember the first time I knew I made the right decision, even though I was broke and I was, you know, had to set my alarm at 1 a.m. to go to a spot at the Comedy Store at 2 a.m. And, you know, no one thought I was going to make it. Like, everyone thought I was insane. And I remember the first time I got a car that was mine, I had done this like writing gig for Lexus. And I had actually gotten, first time I got paid some money. I was writing for comedians at the time only. And I was writing for Last Call with Carson Daly. I was like writing on late night shows and for comedians. And then I finally got enough money to lease a car. And I leased it was a Lexus hybrid. Beautiful car, first car I've ever had. I didn't even have credit. Byron Allen fixed my credit, thank God. So I was able he gave me a phone number, put on a little piece of paper, handed it to me, and was like, call this guy, fix my credit. I will forever indebted to Byron. And the first day I got it, I went to, you know, right on Holloway and La Cienega, down from the Comedy Store, there's that gas station. And I pull in, I'd never had a hybrid car, and there was one of the nozzles that was the gas nozzle was green. You know, one of the nozzles is green.
Yeah, I know it's good. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's the green gas. That's the one that's good for the environment.
Oh no.
That's the green. It's green, and I'm green. God. So I'm putting this gas in because this is the one that's good for the environment. And the nozzle didn't fit in the gas tank. And then I'm like, my car is so new and fancy. This gas station doesn't even have the new shit. Like, you don't even know. So I hovered it above and just let the gas, like, drip in, you know? Like, you guys need to update your gas tanks. So then I'm driving and nothing. So I had filled it with diesel fuel.
Yes, you did.
Within the first 45 minutes of owning
it. Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Yes, I did. I absolutely did.
Yes, you did.
And I drive, and then it gets towed into the Lexus dealership. Everyone is like, the men are like, it like hurts their heart to see what I've done in this car.
Yes.
And I instantly started writing jokes about it. And I was like, this is makes it all worth it, is the fact that as soon as something bad happens to you, you already know you can use it to brighten up someone else's day.
There you go. That's the mindset of a comedian. And oh my God, what amazing minds they are. Guys, Whitney Cummings, not only have you been an amazing guest, damn it, you're an amazing comedian, an amazing story.
Can I say one more thing about you?
Yes, please.
And then I'm going to let you go because I know you have 900 other things, and it's an honor.
You're fine.
To do this, I love you. I just want to say that when we did, you did that COVID show, that outdoor show, right, for ABC. Mm-hmm. It was that special during the pandemic. I don't have to tell you, you saw a lot of comedians not know what to do in that environment. It was amazing to watch you, you know, we were outside, it was a taping, it was half capacity. It was just really wonderful to watch you work in all that you do and see that muscle come out.
Humbly, thank you.
Well, you earned it. That's real deal shit. That's real deal gutter shit.
Yes.
That's like, yes. Yes, he's Kevin Hart, but he can kill in this weird
This thing. We were in a parking lot where she's referring to a special that we did for ABC. And this is like in the heart of the pandemic. And, you know, they were just trying to look for, hey, what can we do? What can we put out? How can we brighten up spirits? And the idea came up to have comedians all do a set on this special. And I think we had about four or five comedians. We have four or five comedians.
The audience was masked, distance. People were still freaked out.
Yes.
I don't even think the vaccine was out.
No, we're in the heart of it. We're talking about the heart of it. I remember. And it was, like you said, that's the gutter. That's the shit. But
that's when you find out who you are as a comedian.
Yes.
A couple people found out things they didn't want to know
yes.
that night.
Yes, absolutely. It wasn't an easy environment, but we made it work. Guys, Whitney Cummings, she has a new special. By the way, her fifth one. Let's not forget that, okay? This is not her first time. God damn it. At the rodeo, she's been doing this for quite some time. And when I say a comic, she is. Make sure you guys check it out. July 26th. July 26th, we're premiering on Netflix, man. The name of the special, Whitney, is called Jokes Why? Well, just because she feels like that's what people need to remember, that as comedians, we just tell jokes. Like she said, she's not running for president. There's not a political scam or campaign behind it. She just wants you to goddamn laugh.
Women should not be president. I think everyone
she
knows.
She just wants you to laugh. Whitney, I mean it when I say thank you. This is one for the books. This is a doozy. I hope my listeners learned a lot about you, because I damn sure did. Please don't stop being you. Please continue to embrace your past. Please keep learning from what you do and tell people what you learned and what you did to get better, because I myself love that information, because I can find ways to use it in my life. I know other people will do the same. That's the benefit of opening up. God damn it, this is Comedy Gold Mines. What do we do here, people?
Kevin, you make me proud to be a comedian.
Fuck right. Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
We love
Fuck yeah.
I love you guys. Thank you. I hope that was good. I'm going to be in a show.
What do you mean you hope it was good? It was fucking great. Great.
I love it.
It wasn't good. It was great. thank you, Whitney. I'm serious.
Thank you.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.